to the Relentless CEO Podcast. With Adam Kiefer. Follow your path to success alongside icons and industry leaders in martial arts, fitness, and more. Let's go. This is the Relentless CEO Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Relentless CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Kiefer, and we have a special episode coming to you that's going to give you the combination of myself and Jody Tension as we do a deep dive into our class plan creation process. So we have two different processes that we use, and you're going to get to see two different examples of how curriculum can be structured for quality and skill over memorization. I'm excited for you guys to check this out and see how you can apply it in your own martial arts schools. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow this page for more. All right. Jody and I have worked together a lot on curriculum, just fleshing out MOVE and what that looks like. So we want to sort of go over each of our class plan processes with you guys. We both do it very different, but the end result ends up being very similar. So what we're going to do is Jody's going to be walking you guys through his process first, and then I'm going to show you how we sort of took Jody's influence and applied it to our brand for MOVE. Because one of the biggest mistakes I see in our industry is the copy and paste mentality, and it doesn't work. If I was to take exactly what Jody was doing at his school and plug it into my school, it would not work the same. It wouldn't feel natural. Okay, so instead, I learned from Jody, we have conversations, and then I think about, well, how do I make this work for our brand and our culture and what we're trying to do and execute for our vision? Okay, I think a lot of us, we see things and we just want to grab it and start plugging it in right away and using it, but we don't actually think about how to adapt it correctly for your vision that you're trying to build out. Does that make sense? Okay, so I think that sort of next level of high level thinking is not just seeing something and copying it right away, but seeing something and then restructuring it to make it work for your business and your brand. So Jody, we're gonna jump into this, do a little back and forth here. Yes, you're gonna have to run this though. So this is first time I met Jody. I don't even know how old, what am I, 17 maybe, 18? 18. This is right after he hook kicked a mouth guard out of my mouth across the mat. It was awesome. This is us now. This is our lethal weapon pose. How'd that get in there? I'm sorry. My bad, dude.
Oh, that's the picture I've been looking for.
That's the one?
That's it.
Perfect. You guys don't know Jody thinks LeBron's better than Jordan, like delusional. No, you can't be good at everything, right? Like. Was that Macy's? This has nothing to do with our presentation. It just pure entertainment. That's all. All right, Jody, I'm gonna let you take over.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right. So, in developing our class plans, the first thing I want to do is outline the agenda, right? And so, these are our life skills that we make sure that you know all the students have that from whatever program we cycle through these 12. And then this is my MAKOs. This is the 5 to 6 year program. And they have their own belt system. So I don't treat my pre-K, you know, students like they're adults. They have their own, you know, learning pace. They have their own agenda. So in this, we have double stripes. If you notice, there are no solid belts here. So their first belt obviously is white. And then they go to double stripe yellow, orange, green, blue, purple, red, half red and black, then black. And then if they age out, they automatically start they start right here. They stay here for three months to get acclimated, and then they'll go to their yellow belts, right? Then so this is my first program. Now if they come in at 7 and older, this is my first program, which is the basics, black belt training level 1, black belt training level 2. Black belt training level 3, then they go to their junior black belts, which is the white, yellow, orange, which coincides with this. And then they go to first, second, third, and higher from there. So there's a process that I already know that if a kid starts here, I'm going to have at least 6-7 years before he gets to here. If he starts here, I'm generally going to have about 4 to 5 years before he gets to here. So we're not rushing this process. We're taking our time. This is a slow-cooked meal. And then we base again offer these life skills. All right, so this is one of my how a killing parent comes in, maybe January, February, and they first sign up, and we tell them this is the we give them the month up front, like this is what's going to happen for this month. So let's say it's January's Parents Participation Week, and this is when we have drills and the parents participate, and then at the end of every class, we're going to have a little dodgeball fun with them. The next week after that, I have the week of performance. Now, when I base my life skill and my mat chat and my drills, it is based on this attribute, right? This life skill. So it's a direct connection between what I'm teaching, what I'm expecting, and the parent can see it on the floor and off the floor by us talking to our students, communicating, and then asking for a performance that week. So I'm a big component in, I don't believe in the necessarily 2 minute chat in the beginning of class and then the 3 minute chat. And you're like, oh, this is the week of performance. And then you give them this nice little speech and then you go on with the madness. Like, I'm like, this is about performance. What is performance? We ask the students, what does that mean? What does that look like? And then while I'm teaching and they're demonstrating, I'm speaking about this. I'm correcting them. Is that the performance that you want? Your hands up. We need a better performance. I'm constantly using this word that whole week. Right from the parents' room, we're constantly using the parents. This is the week of performance. Then we have a little small definition that we give them in class. We put it on our TVs, the screens, the Facebook group, so we know what's expected. Then the week of focus, the week of teamwork. Then we have fun with our board breaking week. Yes, yeah, I have fun with my board breaking. You know.
So can I interject real quick?
Yes.
So Johnny came to our school and taught a day of classes. How many months ago was that? 4 months, 5 months,
something like that.
I still remember the theme of the class was attention to detail. That was the whole theme. And the reason I remember is because he talked about the beginning and then it was woven in throughout the entire class. Every drill was around paying attention to detail. And he just kept hitting it home the entire time. And 6 months later, I can still remember his classes were on attention to detail because it was a theme for the entire class and not just a 3 minute talk and then we'll revisit it next time. Okay, you guys can take those life skills that you're teaching and just
absolutely
build it into the drills. And you don't even really need to change the drills. You just change about what you're telling them to focus on as they do the drills. Does that make sense?
And to even say, in that class, we have brand new trial members in there coming in.
Yeah.
And we signed them up. We've had some ones that was on.
We're 100% that day.
Yeah. And so Adam still owes me a check from that, but I'm gonna let that go right now. So every week, like I said, this is a theme. We have the word of the week. We know and we base the requirements or the class plan is based on this. So I know when I want performance, in particular, when I want performance, teamwork. This one of the life skills is not here, which is socialization. I know during those weeks, there's going to be a lot of pad holding. I know because I want to see the performance, how they hold pads, how they respond. I know with teamwork, how they work together. I know how socialization, the communication when they train together, how they talk to each other. And I'm looking for that. So the week of socialization, I'm just making an example. I'm asking them in the beginning of class, talk to each other. I want to hear jab, cross, roll that good pull. I want to see that communication. Then we start seeing those students who excel. We start... Now, the next level is we put them in leadership. Then the next level from that is then we find our instructors out of that program, right? But it's built in. I can tell you this, and I was telling Jonathan this and Adam, I have a lot of students that they would be instructors someplace else. And I have to find someplace to do it. I have to definitely go to the next level because I got a lot of them that could plug right in. And it's because of this focus that we have right here. This our definitely we are intentional about what we want for each class. So go to the next one. So this would be like to say the week of performance right here. So we get them in a circle, we go over the drill during the day, the week, and then we put up, and they all want to compete for that performance. All right, let me see what we got here. Let's go, Zen.
Let's go.
Round,
round,
double round.
Yeah!
Round, round, double round.
Yeah!
Oh,
I got
it. All right, and Nate and Al, go, 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 go.
Let's work. Come on. Come on, come on, come on. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. Let's work. Oh, oh, listen, hold on. You always finish your drill when you mess up. Finish it from the beginning. Let's go. Start again. Begin. Strong, gentlemen. Strong. Let's go.
But you can skip past it. But that's the, you heard me say, you always finish your drill when you mess up. I do not allow them to continue. If you mess up, go right back to the beginning. I am intentional on that. I hate when I'm doing a drill and somebody messes up and we just, hey, little Mikey, great job.
Would you call that reptile correct?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And we do not go on. That's part of the culture in the school. You keep going over and over and over again. So, these are some of my earlier class planners as well, where I call this one deserving class planner. And this is for like in the beginning program. And I named it after my daughter since she just first started. So what happens is this is the agenda. We're working on establishing punches before and after the round. See, I'm talking about the skill set. Working on establishing the punches before and after the round kick. So my instructors know we have a warm-up. And then we have 10 regular jumping jacks, 10 knee-up jumping jacks, 10 left-right jumping jacks, and 10 jumping jacks. We just have, like, different ways of doing jumping jacks. They'll notice in my leadership training and when I train the instructors, they already know this already, what I'm expecting. And then we have 60 to 90 seconds of stop and go. There should have been a space there. Stop and go laps. Give the command to stop and go. And at this time, you can insert a particular drill when you say stop. So it can be burpees when you say stop. It can be jumping jacks when you say stop. It can be whatever. I give them the freedom to do that, right? Then we have our 1 minute of mat claps. This is just the exercise. These are just 1 minute of hockey push-ups. We pass the pad back and forth. 2 minute stretch, and then I give them the drills. Now, I have four drills right here. I do not expect them to go over all four of these drills, but I'm giving them options of calling the audible if they have to. To be able, if everybody's just rocking that day, we can move on. But if somebody needs more time, if the group is not moving the way I need the group to move, we'll stay within this area. Or you want to piggyback off that?
Yeah, I was just going to say, touch on what Johnny just said about it, giving them options. It's a class plan, not a class law, right? If everything goes perfectly, we follow the plan, class kicks ass. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes we run drills and it goes terrible. Or the kids just aren't correcting the right part that we want them to focus on. So we have to be able to have options, call an audible to change the flow of the class to make it the most beneficial for the students. Yes? Okay. I think a lot of us have, we talked about this in Puerto Vallarta last year. A lot of us have class leads. We don't have coaches. And what I mean by that is you have someone that can run a class according to a plan, but no one in the class actually is getting better or progressing or receiving correction. Because all your person knows how to do is follow the plan. So that autonomy is super important, and getting your coaches to be able to think on their feet so when they see that it's not working, they can adjust accordingly. Yes? Okay, we don't want robots. We want coaches that can identify and then redirect their plan based on what they're seeing on the mat.
Absolutely. And if you see here on the bottom, it says suggestions, right? And I'm right. If you are a one-man show and this becomes a line drill, and you have each student go through these drills at least 10, have each student go through these drills at least 10 times each, or for 3 to 5 minutes of each drill before switching to the next one. If you have enough pads and partners to pair off, I would suggest 2 to 3 minutes per partner if you have enough time. Again, sometimes people get sick. Sometimes it's just you. Sometimes things happen, and I want to make sure that I can and make the adjustment no matter what happens that day in class. But again, this is something that doesn't happen without us training. I have my instructors go over stuff, and then in the middle of them teaching, I'll change the subject, right? We could be boxing, I could say, up, hook kick, and they got to go right into hook kick mode right away. Or I'll throw out another life skill, and they got to connect that life skill to that drill right there, automatic because I need them not to be robots, just like sparring. I need them to go, you know, I wanted to throw this jab and this guy threw something. I got to make an adjustment. I want them to be able to do that with the class planner as well. Can you go to the next slide real fast? So this is the week of focus. This is another, no. This will be the week of focus. So remember I tell you, depending on what I'm emphasizing on is the way I go about designing a drill. So right now I'm like, listen, I need you guys to pay attention to your spacing, right? We need to focus on that. Your foot in the line, your hand up, returning your foot back. This is part of our team class.
There you go. Five. Good. Six. Pop that a little faster. Seven. Go a little faster, a little stronger. Eight.
So my Nine. Emphasis is just that foot, that front foot okay, of getting that jab now. In and my out of jab, that space.
Cross, and I want my shift. So when I say one, I want to see all that together. Any questions?
No, sir.
Any confusion?
No, sir.
All right, here we go. Ready? I want to feel that. And go! Faster, Joseph. Shift back, sir. Go! Good shift, Devin. Beautiful shift. Go!
All right, so again, shift. In this, my emphasis during that class is, where's your foot at? Do you get back to your space? And we have an agenda. And again, that agenda is based on that life skill that the parent can see when they first sign their child up in our program. So when I give them that calendar, and they're like, oh, the week of discipline, oh, the week of respect, oh, the week of socialization, oh, the week of emotional intelligence, I'm already addressing their needs that they want outside of martial arts. But in on the floor is a direct connection between what they want and what I want as well as martial artists, right? So that's one of the ways that we start off with our class planners.
So I want to point out something too. One of the, I think, downfalls I see with a lot of martial arts schools when they train is everything is always the same position. So like you teach a jab cross, but the jab cross is always done the same way no matter what, which in reality is not true, right? We saw Sean O'Malley win his title, stepping back and throwing a cross. It's not always going to be same foot position.
Yes.
So when we teach at MOVE, we have the three levels that we talk about. So the very first one is just what your hands are doing. Second is head movement. Third is foot movement. So our drills all incorporate a different focus element of one of those things of, all right, they have the basics of just doing the upper body. Now, what should be the head movement that's happening during these strikes or during this combo? And then it's like, all right, now what are the feet going to be doing to support this? All right, are we having to close the gap and move forward? Are we having to pivot step and then throw to get a better angle? So if you guys are starting to teach like combat type stuff, and even like regular sparring techniques, we need to think about the situations and scenarios where this would actually be done. And then also the different variations that can be used to train our students so they're not just kicking and punching air when they spar, which is 99% of martial arts schools in this country. You watch kids spar and they're just air punching at each other. So the equivalent of you sending your child to music lessons and all they can do is fucking air guitar. We got a bunch of air martial artists.
Yes, sir.
All right. So I want to sort of break down our process. You can go now. It's all right. Can we throw the box over? Jotty?
I have to bring it to Amy.
That was nerve-wracking. Oh, it's not on yet. Good. Hello?
I think we need volume on the box there. Leah, can we get volume on the box? Thank you.
So, your students only train twice a week, Jotty?
In my beginner program, yes.
Do you
average about, for the next program, I did them in there about three times, sometimes four.
Okay. Because the mental side, the life skill, you leave only at once a week?
But no, that's the whole week.
Well, yeah.
So it's a whole week, and then they rotate. So they go through the 12, and then it rotates all over again.
Okay.
Yes. So it's constantly, you know, put over and over and over and over again.
I do it monthly and I have trouble keeping them focused on what we're focusing on.
Yes.
For the whole month. So I never thought of doing it just 1 week, but it's not too fast.
No,
like,
because I can connect everything back to that, whether it's be, remember what I said, like,
teamwork, socialization. I could connect those two together with how we speak, how we talk to each other. I could put all those, so I find the common life skills, and then I just, so it's almost the same message with just another word. Okay. Right? So I'm saying teamwork, working together, socialization, communicating to work together, right? Emotional intelligence, know how each other feels. So when you guys partner up together, I'll connect okay. them all together.
Leadership, I'm calling out yes. for my partner and yes. leading them on the moves to do.
All right, thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Great question.
Okay, so I'm going to take you guys through the class plan process that we do. Typically, how this works is I will put up on a TV screen whatever, let's say we're talking about year one or like beginner, as most of you guys call it. I will have the entire beginner curriculum for the season up on a screen when we start the class plan process for that season. So that way we're constantly seeing everything that they're testing on. So we know that however we design this class plan, it needs to get them to that end result of being able to efficiently perform all of those things to be ready to graduate to the next belt. But before you start this, you have to have a few things done already. Number one, you need to know for your school, what is a black belt? Like what is the perfect version of a black belt for your school? Because all of your curriculum and your class plans should be engineered in a way that's going to help get your students to that perfect version of a black belt. For us, we have things like we want them to be a martial arts athlete. We want them to be capable of violence. We want them to have confidence, but earned confidence, not false confidence. So all of our class plans are designed to help get them to that point. Notice I didn't say we want our black belt to know the most moves. A lot of us, we think about what we want for our perfect black belt, and then you look at your curriculum, and your curriculum is more designed to teach the most amount of things instead of actually get your black belts to become the version of a black belt that you want to see them become.
Yes.
So what is a black belt? If you don't have this defined, don't write a class plan. Don't write anything else. Don't write any curriculum down, because this is the first thing that you need to figure out. What is the end point you are going towards? It's just like with our business. If we don't know what our goal is, our annual goal is, or our three-year goal, like how do we know what initiatives to put in place? Right? Because we don't know where we're going. There's no plan. Okay, the second step of this is white to black belt requirements. So after I know what my black belt is, okay, now I have to reverse engineer that black belt by figuring out, well, what are the requirements and what are the standards I need to put in place to get them to that end result that I want them to reach? So when you start thinking about white belt, it's like, well, what is the foundation? Well, the foundation for us is jab, cross, base, some listening positions, front kick. That's the foundation for us, and some basic footwork. And then from there, you break that down into seasonal or rotational requirements. So whatever your testing cycle is, we're going to take that white to black belt curriculum and we're going to divide it out. So the way we did this is I put everything I wanted them to get down for year one. Okay. And then it's like, all right, now how do we break this out into four seasons of curriculum that's going to help get them to this end result? And really the whole year, what they do is not super comprehensive. Okay. It's pretty much the same core combos. It's pretty much the same kicks the entire year. We're just doing it in different order, different patterns, all of that stuff. Okay, but I guarantee by the end of that first year, our like orange belts can kick better than black belts in most martial arts schools because they got more reps in. It's not even that we have that much better instructors, it's that the class plans are designed in a way they're getting the maximum amount of reps in and like intentional good reps. That's what we're looking for. Once we have all of this, then we can start writing class plans. Okay, so let's go over seasonal format next. So once I have my outline for everything that's required to test, then I went through and I'm like, all right, well, what does a typical season look like? So for our school, we have 12 weeks in a season, but how does that break down in order to get them ready for testing? And we probably tried like four or five different versions of this before we got to this version, okay? So weeks 1 through 3, we just focus on isolation and light combos. When I say light combos, like 1 to 2 move combos. When I see videos of white belts doing like a 9 move combo, what are you doing? They're not ready for that yet. Like, get them to jab cross correctly. Don't just bolt more shit on. Okay, so isolation means that they're working on the individual combo, the individual moves themselves, focusing on just getting the technique down, the timing down. Okay, they're not putting all the Legos together yet. Okay, they're just pulling out the single individual Lego pieces to get ready to build off of. Okay, then from there, weeks 4 through 6, we start doing more combos, and then we also start really focusing on intent behind the techniques in weeks 4 through 6. Because the way the curriculum is structured, there's not a lot of memorization that needs to be happening. Okay, so weeks 4 through 6, what does intent mean? It means striking with attitude. Okay, it's like when you hit the pad, when they start hitting mitts or they start hitting a bag, you should be watching that and be like, man, I hope no one messes with that kid. Because that kid's going to destroy any bully that tries to mess with him at school. Okay, it should look like there's violence behind the striking. That's what intent is. In our school, we call it attitude. Okay, most schools, when I see them punching and kicking, even when they're hitting pads, it's just sort of like,
like,
if I punched and did strikes with that intent for self-defense, how would it go? But we magically think that that's going to transfer over to real world when they need to use it, and something's just going to click when they're in fight or flight mode. That all of a sudden there's going to become intent and violence behind all of their striking. That's not true. We have to teach the intent. Okay, we have to pull that out of our students. For us, they start grunting when they're doing the strikes. Okay, that's what I want to see. I want to see the parents at our graduations seeing kids that are usually the quiet kids that they maybe see in the class after them or before them but have never seen them do martial arts start hitting pads and be like, holy shit, like I didn't know that that person was capable of that. That's what we want. Okay, but we have to teach intent, right? We have to teach them how to develop that. Okay, weeks 7 through 10 is going to be partner training and sparring. The partner training is not just holding pads for each other. Okay, a lot of it, what we do is offensive, defensive, okay? So if we just take the very basics. If I'm working with our beginner group, and they're doing jab cross, so the other person holding pad, guess what? They're going to shield, and they're going to absorb the punches in their shield on their gloves, and then they're going to throw it back so their partner starts to absorb it. We are teaching them how to get ready for sparring now, because now they're starting to get contact in a safe way, okay? And they're not going to be afraid when they actually start sparring and someone starts punching at them. They're used to it already, okay? They'll work on leg checks. They'll work on those offensive, defensive movements. Also, changing up the timing and how they do striking is super important. Like, one of my favorite drills that we do is, we call it 3-2-1 drill, which means if Jad and I are working, we're doing jab cross, I'm gonna do it 3 times while he holds for me, then he's gonna do it 3 times back. And then I go 2, and we do rounds of just 2-2, and then 1 versus 1 is there's no downtime in between. So I jab cross, he shield, he does a shield, and then he throws it right back. We're not talking in between. We're not stopping. It's just I want to get used to it. As soon as I shield, I'm ready to throw. And I got to get ready. As soon as I'm done throwing, I'm ready to shield again. Because when we spar, we don't always get to dictate the timing. Okay, so it gets them used to punching when they're not comfortable to start their punch.
Can I say something on top of that?
Yes.
And to follow up with that, that aggressiveness or that, you know, that bringing out that attitude, what life skill would you call that? If you just had to give it a life skill, a theme, what would you give it? I'm asking that. Confidence or mental toughness, yep. You know. Right. Now, when you have that mental toughness that week, the parents won't look at it so much like, oh, my baby. They'll go, I see what the instructor is trying to do. And they'll buy in to what you're doing on the floor because they see it as a direct component, a direct connection, a direct bridge to this is going to make my child walk outside with confidence. But if we just got them slugging at each other and there's no moral compass with it, then it doesn't bring value. But so, you know, that mom who made cringe can go, I see what Mr. Adam is doing. I see what Sensei is doing, that they're trying to build up my child's confidence based on the theme or the word of the week or the lesson of the week, right? So this is why we want to make that direct connection with that. Well, it won't just seem like they just sparring hard and just swinging at each other.
Yeah, if you call it mental toughness, you can just like torture the kids literally, yeah, and parents are like, hell yeah, make them suffer. Yeah, this is all for all of our classes. We follow a similar format, but yeah, even with beginners. So their sparring is a little bit different. They do, yeah, instead of actual sparring for beginner, we do more like shoulder tag or like leg tag. So they're still getting the distancing and timing down, but they're not actually like taking hits yet. For us, we wait till they're done with their first year of training before we actually have them do like what all of us see as actual sparring. But they've developed the footwork, the movement, the drill, so that when they actually start sparring, they're actually like good at it. Mm-hmm. So they're less fearful to actually spar. Like, it's craziest thing, growing up doing traditional martial arts, our biggest like obstacle is always sparring, because kids would be afraid to spar, or the sparring gear was so expensive or whatever. At our school, kids like are begging to spar. They can't wait to get to intermediate class to spar, because they've been building up and getting trained on it and getting ready for it their entire first year of training. So when it's time to spar, that's like an exciting thing for them. They look forward to it. That's how sparring should be, right?
Yes, sir.
We don't want them to be fearful. Most likely, if they're fearful, it's because they weren't prepared properly. Yes? So if that's a problem at your school, I would just look and be like, well, how are we actually preparing them for this?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, especially form schools, and I know we used to do this when we were form school, we'd focus so much on forms that it would just be like, all right, time to spar. And there was no like actual curriculum developed to help get them ready to spar. It was just like, put your gear on and do all this shit from your forms, but try and hit each other with it. And then what do? They punch the air, because that's what they're used to doing with their forms.
And when you introduce your sparring, to piggyback off of that, the children that are the most fearful, who do they spar with? They spar with the instructor. Absolutely. I'll come on the floor. I'm like, let's go, me and you, to build that up. And it set the tone for my leadership of what I want. I want to win him. I want to win her. I want to build them up. I don't want to destroy. I ask a question when I say, here come my jab, what we got? Remember the drill? It's a direct connection. You got to build them up, because everybody doesn't come in there as a shark, right? You baby a shark, you baby a goldfish. Keep your sharks away from your goldfish, and you build up them goldfish eventually.
Gary? Yeah, real quick, can we get the catch box?
Yeah.
Right over here. You guys are so nice. You can just whip it at each other.
So I know it's a business question on this. Are you waiting to the end of the first year to do the upgrades, or you're doing the upgrade in the middle of the year?
No,
you're just not letting them spar.
We upgraded them like
two
seasons in, pretty much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, good question. Can you throw it to Paul?
So for like beginners and stuff, how do you handle kids coming in the middle of a season?
Like, pretty damn easy, because the curriculum is so easy to learn.
So even if they're coming in during week 7, 8, 9,
yeah, they're easy not gonna. They probably won't test at the end of that season.
Is that how you prepare them? Like, you say, hey, we're in the middle of a season. You're not going to test at the end of the season.
Yeah. So the first class, we write their first graduation date on their belt, so that way they know right out of the gate when their goal is for their graduation. So for our beginner program, our internal requirements for the first belt is they need to be in that season for at least half the season to be able to get the belt for it, if that makes sense. So as long as they get 6 weeks of classes in, we will let them test for the first belt, just because it's like jab, cross, front kick is pretty much what they're testing on. And obviously, not every kid that is going to be in class for 6 weeks and be ready either. But we sort of base it off of that when we're writing the goal date on their first belt.
Okay. And for me, this is where we differ. Mine's wouldn't be really necessarily based on week 7 and 10. It's going to be based on the life skill that I'm going to go over, right? So I don't have a set designated time to go week 7. I'm doing this. Is it be because my life skill could be based on the drill. The drills that I use here is based on the life skill that I'm going over, opposed to the time, right? But it's still, this is pretty much the same thing for the most part.
Yeah, and part of the reason we ought to do this together is because we know we do this two different ways, and we know that there's certain things that each one of us do that's going to resonate more with you guys. And also, we just want to show you that you don't have to do it one way to be successful. Like, there's a million different ways we can do this, but make it work for you guys, right? Adam, did you have a question too?
Yeah, just quickly, for those that still do forms, how would you integrate forms into a cycle like this? Like, would you do it for a week, or would you do like one day per week sort of thing?
So I would do a totally probably different structure. I think the first part would still be similar, where we're just working the individual techniques for the form or the form section, which is what we used to do. And then we would slowly turn those individual moves into combos that eventually became the form. So that way the kids don't actually realize they're doing the form until about halfway through the season, when they actually... we start putting it all together. I also would go with the form section route instead of teaching whole forms.
Yes.
If I was opening up a form school tomorrow, we'd be teaching like I don't know, 6 or 7 moves at a time that just repeat both sides pretty much. I wouldn't do any traditional forms. I don't think any traditional forms were actually structured in a way that's beneficial for someone to learn. Because none of those grandmasters were experts in curriculum development. There's been some innovation, right?
This is true. And when I was doing the forms, because I didn't get to that point without them, I would have a certain week that I would do, and I would have moves. I would break it down into one form per year, and I would break it down into, let's say the form had 50 moves. Moves 1 through 10, moves 11 through 12. That's how I would do it for me. You know, yes.
Okay, can we throw it over here to Danielle?
I'm going to pass it right to you, Karen. I'm not going over your head.
Boom.
I'm not afraid.
I'm actually going to jump off of your question, too, with those people that are coming in mid-cycle. Yep. Do you test them mid-cycle, or do you wait till the very next testing?
No, we wait till the next testing. Okay. The other thing that I would say is if you're a form school, I wouldn't do it the same way as us, honestly. So when we did forms, we had a separate white belt class that was just for new people coming in. And pretty much that class was just set to get them the basics that they're going to need for their first belt. There's no actual form taught in that class. That they would graduate out of that class every 6 weeks into our beginner class. So we use that as sort of a feeder program into our beginner just because the curriculum was so memory-based that we couldn't just throw them in a beginner class, because if we're halfway through the form, they're just going to be super lost. So in that case, we created a separate white belt class that we'd feed them into when we were doing forms. So that way they get all the basics down. So once they jumped into a beginner class, like, they were able to keep up with everyone because they knew all the basics already from that form. Does that make sense?
Do you still do that without the forms?
No, because it's not memory-based. So we found out that the white belt class wasn't needed anymore. Okay. Because they're just coming in, they're doing jab cross, and they're learning pretty easy stuff right out of the gate.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. Let's throw it to Jed.
So this might just be with more of a traditional forms-based school having that still. We've always had an A day and a B day. So half the week is covering one part of the curriculum. The other half is covering the other piece. Would you suggest having all the same, just 1 week you're working?
Yes, so unpopular opinion for me is if you need an A and a B day, you have too much curriculum, in my opinion. So we used to just do, like, every class during the week, we're working on the same stuff, but we're not always going in the same order of what we're working on. So that way, if they came Monday and Thursday, they'd be working on the same curriculum, but slightly different drills in how they do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that way it's repetitive in the sense they're getting work on the moves they're supposed to work on, but it's also not repetitive in the sense that class on Monday and class on Thursday is not gonna be the same exact class. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? If you're like, man, that sounds like a lot of work, just get the same class per week to start with and then shuffle. Like when we did it, when we had forms, what I tell my coaches is, hey, this is a class plan. Mondays and Tuesdays, you have to follow it perfectly. Rest of the week, you can go in any order you want. So if you want to start with self-defense instead of forms, you can start with self-defense instead of forms, and you guys can mix it up. So that way it doesn't feel like the same experience to the students.
I didn't have an A or B day as well, because what happens if the mother can't make it on B day, or the dad can't make it on B day? Then I'm playing that catch-up thing. But if it's throughout the week, the theme that I want, you know, that's it. Would you know? It made me a bigger net.
Yeah. When I took over the school, they had self-defense day, forms day, sparring day, kicking day, and it was like there'd be people that would attend for like 3 months and never be to a forms class. Wow. So then you have people at the same belt for like a year because they couldn't get to all the classes that they needed in order to learn the curriculum. So I think as much as you can streamline it as possible and just make it simple for people to attend, the better.
Or they could avoid what they don't want to do. Like, oh, yes. That's sparring day. I ain't coming on Thursday.
Sparring day was always late. Yep.
Yeah. So I don't even give you that. Like, you come to class, you find out what's going on.
Yes. Continuing on with this, too. So we do testing week for 2 weeks at the end of each season. And then we end the Saturday of the second testing week is our graduation day, which is more of a celebration and a chance for everyone just to show off what they actually tested and passed on. The reason we do 2 weeks of testing is I was so tired of, after every graduation, having all these kids that couldn't make graduation, and now we have to have all of our instructors working with them 10 minutes after every class to test them individually. Such a logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
When we have 2 weeks of testing, that means they have 2 weeks to pass, which means if Johnny's on vacation week 1 of testing week, guess what? He's still got week 2 of testing week. to test and pass and be there for graduation. Also, it helps with quality control because we can be very picky in week one and not award any testing stripes because we're going to keep those standards super high and we're going to give them feedback so they can come back to week two and test and perform even better that second week. Does that make sense to everyone? Yes. Yep. I'm going to give you the...
Thank you. Yep. So during testing week or 2 weeks, are you guys testing them in class?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, not a separate class.
No, we test them during the regular class time. Here's another thing I'll recommend you guys to do is when we do our testing week, we have the kids line up and walk out like they will at graduation. So they all practice like starting on one side of the mat. They all walk out to their spots. They come up. We show them exactly how we're going to have them perform whatever they're testing on. And that's the way that we test them on it. So now when they go to graduation, it's really easy logistically because they've been role playing how to do their graduation performance for 2 weeks now. So when they just come out, they all know, go here, turn right, get in base. They know that we're going to do isolation first. Then they know how to line up so we can have them show off their pad work for 30 seconds. And everyone knows how it works, and it makes your graduation run that much smoother as a result.
So graduation is more of a celebration.
Like
graduation.
Yep.
Okay,
so it's like a giant demo. And it's that way also kids don't show up nervous. They're more excited to perform in front of everyone now because they already tested and passed on everything.
I differ in that like yeah, I test you. Yeah, I give you the year up front. You have all the dates for a year up front. I tell you June 16th, September 23rd. You know all the dates. And then for anybody that can't make it, 1 month from that date, we have a makeup test for anybody. You know, maybe they got sick or something like that. But you guys show up. I've been dealing with you for 3 months. I got a tremendous leadership team here. You guys show up. So that's just, you know, but that's, you know, just we take different opinions on that.
Question?
Yes. So are you still doing stripes on the belt?
So they get, we just call them testing stripes. Okay. So when they pass certain sections of their test, they get awarded the stripe for that. And then once they have it for each one of the sections, there's a battle ready stripe they get, which means like, you're completely ready to get your belt at graduation.
And you just do this at the end of a class or?
Yeah, so we'll end, if we have a 45 minute class, our testing class plan will be about 35 minutes in length. And then the last 10 minutes, we're awarding stripes and giving feedback to parents. So we actually have a paper we fill out for every student that will actually get handed to the parent with notes on of what they need to practice at home or why they didn't pass a certain section. So that way it's not a long conversation when you come up. I just hand you the paper. Hey, let us know if you have any questions. This is what he needs to work on to get his next stripe. He got this, this, and this today. Next. And then we just do the same thing.
That's awesome.
I do something almost similar, but at the 6 week mark, I meet every parent. I give a mini report card and it has.
So we do that too.
Like exercise. And at that 6 month mark, let you listen, we on the right track or we not on the right track. And that time I say, listen, you can take some private lessons or I just need you to be here. So if, when it's time for them to go for their belt test, if they're not going, some children are 6 months testers, some are 3 month testers, right? I'm like, listen, they're not ready. I had a clear conversation with you. Let's build them up. Let's give them a little bit more time. So I address that at the 6 month, the midway 6 week, address that.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We turn it almost into a similar thing as testing week. It's just progress week. And it's literally the regular class plan. The only difference is the head coach doesn't run the class that time. So we'll have one of the assistant coaches run the class. The head coach will fill out progress reports for each kid in class. And then we give those to the parents at the end of class that week. And it lets them know exactly what their kid needs to work on in order to be graduation ready. And that way, too, if you have to talk to a kid and a parent about not being ready to test during testing week, it's way easier. Because you're like, hey, remember that progress report we gave you at week 6? Remember how we told you you're still messing with the footwork? You're stepping
yes,
wrong?
Yes.
We're still having that same problem, and that's why I can't let you.
You get a black belt, and you get a black belt, and you get a black belt, and you get a black belt.
Just stick it in the microwave, put it on 60 seconds, and deliver it. Yes. Yep. Chris, this is about modalities. I'm throwing the mic at you.
No, but I have 7 questions. But I'm just going to stick it to 1. So... So your athletes have athlete scorecards, and then you have those athletes go to level up week where they're leveling up to their next power stones. My thing is, you're giving them the athlete scorecards. Are you giving them a couple weeks before the level up week, or you're doing it?
So those cards I showed you guys yesterday, they get it on graduation day. So they get their new belt, and then we give them the card with all the requirements for the next season on it. and the QR code on the back to train. Okay. So they know before they even come to their first class for that season exactly what they're going to need to learn and test on. And then when we do the progress reports is pretty much that card, postcard size, with a spot for us to do a score 1 through 10 by each one and then leave notes on there.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which one? Yeah, it's actually in the martial arts systems course. Yep. Yeah. So martial arts systems course has the progress report. It also has our testing sheets that we use. They're slightly different for MOVE, but it's literally the same concept. All right. We're going to hold questions again because we still got slides to get through. And I want to make sure that we have time for everyone to go and eat a little bit before they go to the party tonight. So jumping on to the next part, what do we do once we have seasonal format? Curriculum-based warm-ups is what I focus on next, okay? What are curriculum-based warm-ups? So for me, I want the warm-ups to assist the curriculum that they need to test on, okay? Which means we're going to try and tie in as much of what they're doing for testing into the warm-ups as possible. So this is an example for our current season for our year one class. So look at the warm-ups. Jumping jack, pull. So they jumping jack, pull. Jumping jack, pull. Pull is their defensive move that they have to test on this season. We're getting more reps in the warm-ups as well while still making sure that they're getting a good workout. Forwards and backwards shifts. So like weeks one through three, they're just working boom and then following along with the coaches, just working on the footwork, switching, same thing. And we are watching that back heel like a hawk. That heel is going to be up the entire time. So now they're getting comfortable with the movement on it, right? Superman push-ups, that's where they start and push a position on the ground. They raise their hands up all the way straight on the ground and bring it back in while their body's flat, and then they push up. We're just teaching them the basics of push-ups. Okay, Superman push-ups are one of the easiest ways to do that because it makes them tighten their core as they push up, and it helps them with their form. Elevated sit-ups, crab kicks are front kicks from the crab walk position because front kick is their kick for the season. So again, everything ties in together. And then we like switching it up the next weeks. We do station warm-ups. Weeks 4 through 6. So we split our mat up into 4 sections, and then we'll have equipment set up before class starts, and we do 2-minute rounds. So this week's a little bit longer warm-up, 4 through 6. It's at least 8 minutes since there's 4 stations. Okay, but everything that they're doing for the warm-up is going to help them with what they're testing on. So calf raise, front kicks. We know with front kick, one of the hardest things is extending the ball of the foot for kids. Okay, so one of the drills that we have to do is they do a calf raise first. Why? It gets their foot in the right position. And then when they chamber and kick, it's like, well, we're going to keep that same foot position on the kick, right? So it transfers over. We're intentional about all of this. The bounce shift. So they do ladders, and they're just going in and out, shifting. So they're getting used to getting ready to throw a jab, right? Jab burnouts. We have them rep. They do a minute of burnout jabs on a Wave Master each side. Our warm-ups, our kids are getting more reps than most martial arts schools get them in a full class because of line drills. Stop fucking doing line drills. Here's an awesome stat, guys. So when we saw those 75 hours of class footage, I went through, and every class that had line drills in it, I wanted to get data on the line drills. So I would pick one kid, and I would watch that kid go through the line drill. I would count the reps, and I would count the total amount of active time for that child in a line drill. In the average 5-minute line drill, 50 seconds of active reps, 4 minutes and 10 seconds of waiting. And that's across 75 different martial arts schools, most of which are in this group and in this room. Line drills are the death of repetition, in my opinion.
I disagree, though. I think
you can make them.
No. Hold on, my brother.
Yeah. you can do things to help them get more reps in line drills, but most of the classes we watch is just them standing and waiting.
I think the thing with a line drill is this, though, right? If you take a private lesson with a kid, right? Let's just say a student. One private lesson is worth how many classes, would you say? Like, if I say I took a private lesson with a student, it's just me and that student for 1 hour, how many classes would you think that was worth? 3 or 4. 3 or 4. I would agree with you, yeah. Right? in my line drill, I'm focusing on every little detail that I may not catch, right? I'm looking at you. That's just my personal time with you, but I'm not spending, of course, all that amount of time in the sense of hours. But I think it comes back to having a great team.
Yep.
That you can trust with the line drill, right? If it's just people design and taking forever, if you develop a great team, you could have those kids in that line moving with good reps, good technique, where you don't have to spend all day waiting. So I think it's what you said with a caveat, right?
Yes. So the only way that our coaches are allowed to do line drills in class is if there's something the kids are doing at the front of the line, something that they're doing at the end of the line, and something that they're doing in between that is all relatable to something that's going to help them get better with what we're teaching. It's not everyone do jumping jacks while you wait. Yeah. Like jumping jacks and line drills are like the two biggest cop-outs in the martial arts industry. We can't think of something. We're like line drills.
Yeah.
Everyone's standing still. Have them do jumping jacks. Like, it'd be awesome. Someone's going to go punch your kids and they're going to do jumping jacks. It'd be cool.
Less a question, more a statement, because I've been having this issue with line drills, was like time, whatever. And so we built a culture in the school now where it is in the instructors expect it, where the kid in the line has to pay attention to the instructor at the front of the line, and they have to do everything to the air while the kids are doing it to the pads.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
and
way
if
better.
If they're not, that's why they're getting the extra reps. But until we instituted that, it was the same problem.
Yes.
But
yes.
Then it started to get a culture of kids just doing it. And so it's helped our
development
a lot.
Yeah, I love that. Last thing, mini band shuffles. So we have mini bands for our school, and they just put them around their thighs, and they're just going up and down the mat like this. What does that translate to? Shifting, right? It's working the same muscles that they're going to need to help them become explosive, moving in and out when they're fighting. So one of the things that we're doing more of is just incorporating certain pieces of equipment that don't take up a lot of room, but can be used to help them. So resistance bands, mini bands, jump ropes are the three that we're incorporating, okay? And again, parent comes into our school, they see the kids warming up in stations, they see kids doing mini band drills, they see kids getting 100 reps on a jab. Like, they look at it different. Like, oh, these are athletes. These are combat athletes. These are martial arts athletes. They don't see us as karate people. They just see them as athletes when they're training, right? All right, last part here. Week 7 through 10, we go back to a more traditional warm-up. Toe touch front kicks. Let's think about this. When we teach slips, right? Here, toe touches. What are they doing? They're learning how to slip, right? That's all they're doing. This and this. It's the same motion. I'm just keeping my hands up, right? So they don't even know that they're prepping for slips right now, because we don't really cover that till intermediate. But now when we start teaching it, we're like, hey, remember those toe touches we've been doing for the last year?
Yes.
Guess what that is? It's slips. And everyone's like, oh my God, that's how you do it, right? Double jab switches, they're just working jab, jab, turn, jab, jab, because that's part of their curriculum. They already know how to do it by then. And then we have some other just core things in there as well. But everything gets tied in to the curriculum as much as possible when we're doing the warm-ups. All right, let's keep going. So once we have the warm-ups, now it's, what is your weekly formatting for class plans? I think people overthink this too much. It shouldn't need to be anything complicated, okay? You're gonna see ours, and you're gonna be like, that looks so simple. Okay, huddle talk for 3 minutes. So what we do is we do like a football, like motivational huddle. So we have all the kids huddle up around the coach, and when we talk, it's more of a motivational speech about the life skill than us just talking about a life skill. Like, we want those kids to be fired up about goal setting. We want them to be fired up about emotional intelligence, okay? We want the energy to be dictated by the coach that's leading that huddle. And what we used to do is we'd have all the kids just, like, sit smart, and then we'd sit there, and there'd be a piece of paper, and the coach would just sort of, like, be doing this off the piece of paper. And I'm, like, watching it as a parent. I'm like, man, I want, like, the Drew Brees, like, pre-football game huddle. That's what I want for my students. I want them to be fired up about life skills, not just like hear someone reading off a piece of paper about life skills. From there, we do our warm-ups, which can be anywhere from 5 to 8 minutes, depending on the week. And then really simple, guys, 3 sections, 10 minutes each. When I say section, we have a general theme. So one section might be just working the front kick a bunch of different ways. Another section might be working their double jab a bunch of different ways. right? But just three sections, 10 minutes each, changing up how we're doing the reps. Then we do our announcements, any achievements, and bow out. Okay, so this is the general structure we use. So what does that look like actually like fully built out? So let's cover that next. And what I'll say is this, guys, when we do this, it's me and both my head coaches in a room. We have the curriculum for the season up on a screen, and I'm whiteboarding all of this. I don't actually type up class plans myself. What I do is I whiteboard it out, and then my head coaches go, and they actually take the whiteboard, and they put it onto the class plan template and write out the whole thing. They will send it to me for approval. I'll change a couple things. I'll approve it, and then they send it to the rest of the coaches. Okay, it's really simple. You don't have to sit there and type it all out yourself. If you have someone that's capable of taking your writing and just putting it on paper, have them do that. Saves you time. Okay, so we're going to show week one of our current beginner season. So we have our huddle talk. We're talking about emotional mastery right now. We have our warm-ups. You guys saw the warm-ups already. Section one is number two front kick. So we teach number one front leg, number two back leg, okay, to make it simple for our kids to understand. Then we have our technique breakdown. You're going to see that we have a letter in brackets by each one of the drills. That is just to tell the coaches what formation that should be in. So D means that they're on their dots facing forward. Okay, so technique breakdown, they're teaching them the front kick, facing forward. Kids are learning the mechanics of it. Okay, then we have a drill called laser kicks they do with a partner, where the partner's holding a pool noodle sideways and a mitt, and they're chambering up over the noodle, kicking the mitt, putting their foot back down. Okay, so that's why you see the P for partner training. Second section, we go to double jab. So GMD means group movement drill. So this is like a line drill where the whole class moves together. So we'll have everyone on the dots. Everyone will take like four steps back. They'll be at base. And then the whole class is moving with the coach, just working the footwork for the jab and getting that shoulder into it. And then we turn around, we do the other side. And then we turn around again, and then we start throwing the jab with the footwork. But the cool thing is, no one's waiting. The whole class is moving together down the mat. And then they turn, and they move back together down the mat. So everyone is getting the reps in together. Then we go to double jab footwork. So they're going, ba, ba. Bah, bah, and doing it with the coach. And then they start throwing the jab with it. All right, we're building off of each other. And also we're making sure that they have the foundational footwork down first so it's easier to throw the hand. Okay, this is all intentional. When we think about just like moving with a jab, the easiest part of the jab is what? The punch, the extension. So we get the footwork first. So that way they're isolating that. This now becomes easy. Then we add the head movement, boom, boom, and we keep building on it. It's all strategic, right? Okay, when we're building our drills, okay, it should be based on, well, what's the foundational part of this drill? What's the part of the drill that, or the technique that people have the most trouble with? And then how do we isolate that out so we can make it an easier learning process for them? Does that make sense? Okay, a lot of times when I see drills written in class plans, it's just like jab cross on mitts. It's like, well, what are we helping them with? What are we getting them better at with doing jab cross on mitt? What's the purpose of it? Because when your coaches understand that better, they can start explaining the why behind why your students are doing it this way instead of that way, which helps everyone in the room to get better understanding of when to use this move, how to use this move, what situations I would use this move in. That's what becomes the difference between you teaching and one of your coaches teaching. And that's why a lot of reasons when we teach and then we step away from the mat, everyone starts asking, like, well, when are you teaching again? Mm-hmm. And it's because most of you guys can explain the why behind a lot of what you're doing, but your coaches don't have that ability. So they're just doing their best to mimic or copy you. Does that make sense to everyone? So getting them to actually understand the philosophy behind it is so important so you can replace yourself without a drop off in quality.
And also notice when he says huddle talk and the warm-ups, it doesn't always have to be in this exact order, yep. Right? It could be 1 minute in the middle, in the beginning, 1 minute at the end, and one part in the middle, one part at the end, right? It doesn't have to just be, okay, 3 minutes, let me come up with something. Yeah. And then for the last 42 minutes, you have nothing to say, right? This has to become the class theme, right?
So here's the thing. When we do our huddles, they're all pre-written out, okay? And we have our coaches role play them ahead of time. But then there's usually a general theme, even with emotional mastery. Let's say that we're working and talking about how to control their emotions. We start teaching them how to breathe because we teach them Wim Hof breathing as part of like how to regain control over their emotions and their body. So now throughout class, after we go a heavy round, we'll do a breathing round in between based on what we just talked about in the mat, in the huddle talk, and tie it back in. See, you guys, you see how everyone just brought their heart rate back down? Everyone feels more calm now. Same thing when we get angry or frustrated or stressed. We do this breathing, and it relaxes us. It calms us so we can think clearer now. If we're in sparring, and maybe you felt like you got hit hard, or maybe you start to feel like a little panicky towards the end of your round, in between rounds, you got to control that breathing again. Okay, and we tie it right into the class plan. So now these kids are getting reps in at using breathing to gain control over their emotions again, right? Even with goal setting, we did goal setting last season. Think about all the elements you can talk about in goal setting. Can you talk about mental toughness when it comes to reaching your goals?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, when it comes to goal setting, can I talk about overcoming obstacles and failures?
Yes.
Yes. Can I talk about breaking down a goal into baby steps, just like we're going to break down this technique into baby steps? There's so many elements, right? So you can take any element of that. Like, even though we talked about goal setting the last 12 weeks, we also talked about mental toughness. We talked about action steps. We talked about all these different elements that go along with goal setting and put it into our classes as a result. So everything is sort of themed out throughout the entire class. Also, the thing I love about it is it's not just you talking about this life skill now. The kids are learning how to actually take action on this in real time as they go through the class. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yes.
All right. Continuing on, last drill we have on there, we go to partner training, okay, where they're going double jab back and forth. So I'm going boom, boom, and then I'm holding for my partner. And then I go back. And we're just getting those reps in and doing it when we're not comfortable with the timing. It's just go, 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 go. It doesn't matter if you're ready. You gotta get ready and throw it, right? Also, look, so far, we've done drills on dots. We've done partner drills already with mitts and noodles. We've done group movement drills where the whole class is moving. We've gone back to partner drills. The formations are constantly changing throughout class. Okay, we're disguising repetition constantly, not just in the drill that they're doing, but also in just where they're standing in the class, so it doesn't feel so repetitive. So when you guys are programming your class plans, I encourage you guys to go back and look and be like, are we just on dots facing the same way the whole damn class? Like some of y'all, when we watch your footage you guys sent in, it was like 45 minutes of line drills. 45 minutes of line drills, which means they got 5 minutes of reps.
Or 45 minutes of techniques that didn't connect at all with each other.
Well, that's just martial arts curriculum in general. All right, then we go to the pull. So this would be like section three. Okay, they break down the pull. What's the C for? Circle. So the whole class is in a circle. So they're all in the circle. Coach is in the middle. They're teaching the pull. Everyone's in the circle formation doing their pulls with the coach. Okay, then we do a drill called surprise attack. We have all the parents come out, and they all grab a noodle and a mitt, and then they walk around. It's almost like the blocking game back in the day. They walk around. Everyone's going to be in base. When they come at you, they're going to swing the noodle. You're pulling and coming back. Then round two, they're going pull, and then they're learning to step with that front foot into the jab. And then they go pull, jab, cross. It's all stuff that is going to help them get ready for testing, but also give them different situations to practice this. Then we go to announcements. We go achievement stripes or our side quest stickers, bow out. And then notice what's on our class plan at the end. Progress talks. The class isn't done yet because the parents haven't received progress reports from the coach. So after every single class, our coaches are required to get off the mat because we want them in the lobby talking to parents and giving the parents feedback about how their kids did. Okay, all we require is that they talk to at least one parent each class and give a progress update too. Okay, we have the script in the martial arts systems course. Okay, if you're looking for the progress talk script, it is in there. Role play it with your coaches, and now all of your parents feel like they're in the loop with sort of where their kids are constantly. Because not only are they getting those progress talks, they're also we have the progress check 6 weeks in, okay, the testing sheets they're getting, those two testing weeks. We have our quarterly courtesy calls that we're doing. We have our member outreach we're doing throughout the whole season. The number of touch points with parents is awesome now, which means attrition gets a lot better as a result. Okay, parents don't feel like there's unknowns. We talked yesterday about removing the unknowns. Same thing with your curriculum and in their progress. What are the unknowns in the parents' brain as their kids are going through your classes and going through a testing cycle? Well, usually it's, how is my kid doing? Are they ready? I see them making this mistake, but I don't see it getting fixed. Like, what's going to happen? All of these different things, right? So the more we can have those conversations on a daily basis with parents after class, the easier it is to address those concerns before they become problems. Okay. Now also, since we're so used to talking to the parents in between class, I'm finding out right away if mom's having trouble getting Johnny to class. Instead of them just coming in and saying, hey, we want to cancel because I've been having a hard time getting Johnny into class. Now we had this conversation already. It wasn't the I need to cancel conversation. It was like, hey, by the way, while you're here, any tips for helping me get Johnny to class easier? Different conversation, right? I'd rather have 100 of those conversations than 100 conversations of I need to cancel because I can't get Johnny to class. Because usually if they're coming to you to cancel, that's a hard save at that point. Because they've already been thinking about this probably for at least a few weeks or at least a few months. So their mind is mostly made up by the time it gets to that. So if we can hit those head on before it becomes the cancellation talk, way easier to keep them around. All right. Questions? Danny, can we throw that over?
In order to get your coaches to talk after classes, is there a break between the classes?
Yes, good question. So we have a 10-minute break between all of our classes. And then the way that we have it structured is all of the assistants have a number assigned to them. Actually, all the coaches have a number assigned to them. And that number lets them know what they need to do in between classes. So some of our coaches, if they are like number one, they're doing parent progress talks between classes. They're number two, they're taking attendance for the next class and greeting every single person at the door as they come in. If they're number three, they're on the mat. They're going to probably be the person that's leading warm-ups. And they're on the mat just to encourage the kids to practice before class starts. One of the things that really changed my mind on what should be happening between classes is I went to Art of Jiu-Jitsu in Costa Mesa, which is like one of the most beautiful schools ever. I went there on a Saturday morning at like 8 o'clock. I think their first class was at 9. And it was 8 o'clock and the mat was full. And I was like, I thought the first class was at 9. No, there are people coming early and practice before class. They've created that culture where everyone's on the mat practicing, and then right at 9, the professor got everyone lined up, and they got started in class. And I was like, oh, that is a cool culture. Like, I want my students to just show up, and if the mat's empty, they know they should be out there practicing before class starts. So we have a coach specifically out there that will be holding the mitts for kids before class, that will be encouraging them to practice, that will be helping them with technique just to get them ready. Also, those kids end up performing way better in class because 10 minutes before, they were on the mat, like going through all the things they know that we've been working on in their class. Does that make sense? So if you don't have breaks between classes, I would highly encourage it because that's your time to connect with parents before they leave. Good question. Anything else? CD?
Quick question. Earlier you said that you broke out the curriculum white to black belt.
Yes. And when I say white to black belt, I don't mean by belts.
By beginner, season. Intermediate, advanced.
Yes.
By season, correct?
Correct.
Okay, yep. Cool. Because I think a lot of us still had that old white belts, yellow belts.
Yeah, so
belts.
We don't have belt-based curriculum. So it's not like you need to do these things for a white belt. It's like, no, we have year one curriculum. And you just need to get through all four cycles to complete year one and move on to year two.
Cool, thanks.
Yep.
What else?
Anything else? No, because it all builds off each other. Right. Yeah, so they don't need to because it's not memory based anymore. So year two builds off of year one. So it's not like they're stopping doing all the stuff that they did in year one. We're just changing it up a bit in year two and adding some new techniques. Stacking. If that makes sense. Yep.
So I do just the same thing.
Yeah.
And then what I do in year three. In every, it's still the same four cycles. We have a thing called Back to the Future, where I grab something, one thing for each cycle that they had to do as in year one and year two. And I said, listen, because what happens is when you get to that close to the black belt, you go over year one stuff and they're like, oh, the block was wrong or the kick was wrong. So we make it fun by calling it Back to the Future. And we have that one of those in each and every cycle, whether it be the first punching combination, whether it be the first form or whatever the case may be, to make sure that I tell them we got to go back to go to the future of this next belt, right? So we have a little portion called Back to the Future that addresses those concerns.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's throw it over to Mike.
Yeah, coming.
So I saw the movie, you have the 12 ranks. Can you explain how the student's track is different from, say, a 4-year-old or 5-year-old to an 11-year-old? How they're going through that same 12 belts?
So there's more than 12 belts. There's 12 belts for the 8 to 12-year-old program, or the 8 and older program. For our mini movers, they have 2 years of belts in that program, so 8 belts in the mini movers program, because the youngest, let's say they just turned 5 and start in that program, they're going to age out within those 8 belts, if that makes sense. So that curriculum is different. So it's much more pared down. It's 30-minute classes. They're doing less combo work, more isolation, more just like connecting patterns of 2 moves. So it might be like a footwork and a cross or something. So that we focus that, and it is more game-based in that situation. But all the games are for martial arts technique. It's not like we're rolling a ball and they're running and grabbing the ball and bringing it back. Sorry, schools.
I'm trying to be a nice guy.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
So what I do is I have pretty much the same setup, but I have 8 white belt experiences with my 5-year-olds. I have 8 white belt. I don't believe in an advanced 5-year-old. I don't believe in that, right? I have 8.
My 5-year-old is advanced, Johnny.
Yeah, listen, man. You know, I have 8 white belt experiences, and what that means is there are 8 progressions that I have based off of the same, but smaller. But this is the one thing I noticed that, and I didn't get to this part. If you change, like I said, 25%, it feels like a new belt experience to them. So let's say if I have 4 moves, I'll change. One of them would be a brand new move in there. 3 would be the same. The next cycle, it'd be 1 brand new one. The third cycle, it'd be 3 of those, but another brand, maybe one brand new move in there. And it always feels like to that child, he or she is doing something different. But I still base it off the same jab, cross, front kick, round kick. And in my 5 to 6-year-old, I emphasize more on the blocks, the traditional blocks, and we just put the drills together with that.
So if you've got a, say, we start at 3 years old.
Okay.
If
psycho.
Yeah,
he's crazy.
Yeah. If we have a kid who now goes to the 7s and 9s, he's already been with us for, you know, 3 years mm-hmm. or so. Where do you think a good starting point would be to transition them into that new age group with their ranks?
We put them at the first belt.
Yeah.
So let's say they're in our Mighty Movers program and they end with like our portal belts or whatever.
Yeah, they go through them all.
Yeah, so they go through them all. When they'll wear that belt into beginner class, so whatever the last belt they got in Mighty Movers, they'll wear it into the year 1 class, and then the first belt they get in year 1 is going to be like whatever our level 2 is.
Rank. Level 2.
Yeah, so the belt they move in that class with acts as their white belt, essentially. Oh, okay. And then at the first graduation, they get their first actual, like, year 1 belt.
Yeah, us is the first solid belt. Same.
Yeah,
they get that first solid belt.
Gotcha.
And then I have something in that group that they never did in the group below. So 100%. It always gives that new experience. When they go to the next grade, out of the Bexes going to, you know, year 2, there's something in there. There's always something in there that they did not do in the first group. And it just builds and builds and builds from there.
Yeah. And then there, we have mixtapes for them. We call them Mighty Mixtapes. They're just like shortened versions of what they're going to do when they get into the older level classes.
Yes.
Here you go.
Back to the progress reports.
Yes.
Like the mid 6-week ones. How do you time that?
What do you mean?
Like, how do you fit that? Like, you do the whole class, right? Maybe 20, 30 students. How do you time that within the class to be able to get it to the parents before the end of class?
Because the head coach doesn't teach that class that week.
Yes.
Okay.
So the head coach.
So they stay off and they just take notes.
Yeah, the head coach is just doing grading. And then one of the assistant coaches is actually running the class. So that way the head coach can just focus on grading everyone.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes. Exactly the same thing.
So when you get to the end of the season,
I'm sorry, what do you mean by end of the season?
end of the 12 weeks.
End of the cycle. And you're doing the testing. So if they miss the 2 weeks of testing for whatever reason, they're sick, whatever, just like, all right, that's it, you missed it. So do you try to do a makeup with them?
If it's extenuating, like death in the family, they were sick, like something unavoidable like that,
yeah,
then we'll let them do like a 5 or 10 minute session before classes the following week where we'll test them.
Yeah.
But if it's like they just didn't come to enough classes into the season, sorry, you got to wait.
And if they don't pass, then it's you got to wait.
Yes, absolutely.
It's what it is.
And, okay. Here's the cool thing, guys. Like, since our curriculum sort of spread out over a year, but it's very similar each season, like they can not pass, go to the next season, and it's not like they're working brand new stuff and they'll never get to revisit that again because it's very similar to what they did last season, just different ways, cooking it differently, right? So it makes it easier in that essence. Where back in the day when we did forms, if that kid didn't pass that season, well, he would have to like technically wait till we got to that season again to actually test and pass on that form again. And it just becomes a little bit harder thing to manage, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, yep. to even piggyback off of that, like I think about it like grades. Like each belt, each cycle is a report card. It's not a grade. It's not a new grade. So for example, let's say we're in fifth grade. You come in, I start in September, you come in December. The teacher doesn't go, well, you know, we all learn the same thing at the same time. So if you kind of missed out a little bit, I can still promote you because it's the same information regurgitated over and over again. And then with me, if the belt test is September 1st, I automatically know the first week of October is anybody who missed that date for some circumstance that came up. Now, if they don't make that, I used to accommodate them again. I don't do that anymore. Yeah. If this is the date to make up for it, you don't do that, okay, I'll see you the next cycle.
And that's the power of those progress reports too, because they know ahead of time where their child is halfway through the season, so all those conversations become way, way easier to have.
Adam, quick question.
Yep.
On the curriculum, so you've got year one, week one. How much is this repeating in a 12-week cycle? Is it repeating 3 times, 12 times?
You mean this exact class plan?
Yes, sir.
It never repeats. So it'll, like, week one, it'll repeat maybe in week one, and then week two, it's a whole new class plan. Still same curriculum set of whatever they're doing that season, but all new drills. And it's all sort of cumulative-based, so it all progresses on each other throughout the season.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We're unstoppable. To the top, we about to go. That CEO, I need to know the impact we about to grow. Competition comical. Straight A1, we on the road. Money focused for the goal. Tell them what they need to know.
Yeah, we unstoppable.